And now, straight from Beacon Hill.
This is State Senator Bob Hedlund, Republican of Weymouth.
Well, let's be clear that it's the Republicans that have been in charge of this project.
I'm the Secretary of State.
Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Why do you keep saying that?
Because they pay me every time I do. It's a really good way to make money.
Or a silly bill. A silly bill. Yeah, it's like when I had a bill that had to do with, you know, circus animals.
It's time for the State House Report.
Yes, I am a Republican in Massachusetts, believe it or not.
Here's State Senator Bob Hedlund.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Yes, it is time to be joined by State Senator Bob Hedlund. Senator, how are you this evening?
Hi, guys. I'm happy to be with you on your first God-drill-free Monday night.
only you. I got to tell you, I was listening. I was putting up the podcast last night, and you were very gracious in kind of sending him off into his next position in life.
Yeah, he's a good guy. You know, we had a lot of fun.
Bob, I was flipping through the ledger, and I saw a nice piece that you'd put in there about transparency up at the State House. I want to know your thoughts, continued thoughts on that, because I think there's a lot of people that have been calling for that a long time, especially most notably Tom Keyes in his last race.
Right. The Ledger has actually done a good job on this at all levels of government, despite dwindling resources and they don't have the staff they once had. They've been very aggressive on making communities comply with open meeting laws, and Kevin knows this from covering local government.
Mm-hmm.
The Ledger's really been on top of this and not letting some communities get away with moving certain things into executive session that might not, maybe shouldn't go into executive session, and they've been very interested in what's going on Beacon Hill in terms of transparency. And, I've been consistent on this issue since I took office. I've filed legislation to give the Inspector General and State Auditor access to records of the legislature, which we're exempt from the open meeting law. And it's just very frustrating. They actually called me and asked me to write the op-ed piece. But reading the ledger, I was very surprised how thorough and how much ink and paper they devoted to the issue. But it was a little bit frustrating to read it because, they had a number of local Democrats interviewed. No, yeah, we're all for transparency. Nobody's going to get up and say, I'm for secretive government.
Yeah.
that wouldn't fly with constituents of ours. But what's interesting about it, and the ledger missed this, and I was with great frustration that they missed this, we just had our rules debate, and I point this out in the column. Absent of any oversight by or ability of the Inspector General and State Auditor to get records of the legislature, and absent the fact we're exempt from the open meeting law, what governs us is our rules. And we just had debate in January to adopt our rules. Mm. If you look, for instance, at the House, there were 24 amendments offered by Republicans, some procedural stuff, but a lot of things that were bringing transparency to state government. And this is an amazing statistic. 24 votes on 24 amendments, and every single Democrat voted every single time against every single Republican amendment. And that included things like Jeff Neal had an amendment that said you had to have 24 hours, a bill available to the members 24 hours before you vote on it. Now, that's a pretty amazing concept that, a $25 billion state budget should be available for you to read for at least 24 hours before you vote on it. Or Angelo D'Amelia down in Bridgewater, he offered a local aid resolution had to be in place by March 15th. That's essential to communities. That was voted down by every single Democrat.
Yeah, that's something that every community struggles with, no matter what affiliation you are.
I go before my selectmen every year, and all my reps go in there and talk about, we want to get you an early local aid resolution. Well, here's a chance to do it. The other thing was one other I'll just highlight is, like I said, there were 24. Another one was post our votes online within 24 hours so that people can know how we vote.
Mm-hmm.
And that was voted down. And we even had, there were Democrats in the House of Representatives, one got called out on this. There were Democrats in the House of Representatives who campaigned on that issue and then voted against it, and have been called out on that. So I don't understand why, when it's a good idea, you have to just follow what the leadership tells you to do and vote against things that you campaign on, vote against things that you know in your heart are the right thing to do on issues like this that the ledger talked about on Saturday, and that's transparency.
I want to kind of I want to move this conversation forward. You have filed, or you are on the cusp of filing, some very interesting.
It's been filed
in regards to an anti-drone bill. What made you put this together? Was it Rand Paul? Is it what our U.S. government what's come out over the past week that the U.S. government has been contemplating whether we would attack one of our own citizens on U.S. soil? What is it?
It didn't have to do with Rand Paul, but I certainly got some inspiration last week from Rand Paul. I actually filed the bill in December,
okay,
in conjunction with the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts, the ACLU of Mass. They actually drafted the bill for me. They presented the idea to me. It is being carried in the House of Representatives by a Democrat representative from the North Shore, Colleen Gary. So it's a bipartisan bill. And the reason we filed the bill, I wholeheartedly agree with ACLU on this and others, you have a burgeoning technology, something we didn't think about 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And we know that it's being used in our so-called war on terror overseas, but it's something that now is being and proliferating with local law enforcement and proliferating domestically. And you have, for instance, the Boston Metropolitan SWAT team. It's just communities around Greater Boston. They've actually applied now to utilize a drone, and you're going to see it. The technology is such that, I mean, a local police department can have these in around now. Some of them are very small.
So, well, if you look,
there's no rules regarding privacy.
Yep.
Governing their use, because it's a new frontier. So what the bill does, and I'll just be very brief, Kevin, it just says that any community that acquires one, let's say, you know, Marshfield wants to buy one for their police department, it has to have the approval of a deliberative body, like the city council or town meeting. So it has to be vetted at the local level. You also cannot use these to spy on individual citizens without a search warrant, because that's primarily how many of them are used. Now, you can't go and bust someone's door down without a search warrant, so you shouldn't be able to fly one over someone's backyard and look in someone's window with it, which is what they're capable of doing. And it prohibits drones with weapons domestically.
Yeah, see, you kind of answered my questions there, because I was going to ask you. I saw, you know, online about 7 or 8 different variations of drones, depending on how large it would be and how long it would fly to, like you said, the smaller remote control ones that could, you know, be capable of, you know, spying on somebody with a built-in camera.
They have very small ones now. It seems it's a burgeoning technology for peeping Toms now, too. They've got ones that you can, tiny ones with a little camera in it, you can fly outside someone's window and in their window.
Now, Bob, isn't the concern, if you were to flip the, you know, the use of police and law enforcement, isn't the concern also that terrorists or people with you know, bad intents could get one of these and you know, fly it, as most recently we saw, we don't know whether it was a good one or bad one, at one of the major airports in New York. There was one spotted that could have interfered with a flight.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't think any terrorists that want to do harm are going to worry about some bill Bob Hedlund filed on the Mass legislature.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, you raise a good point that they're very mobile in some cases, and it's a new technology, and certainly terrorists could use whatever is available to them. I mean, so, yeah, I think that's a concern.
Take a moment to talk about Rand Paul.
By the way, can I just add one thing on that point?
Please
that's
do.
That's one reason why we should be very judicious about our use of these overseas. You know, a lot of the weapons that, you know, the Taliban's used against us in Afghanistan are because of the amount of weapons we dumped into that country when they were our client and supposedly our ally when they were fighting the Soviet Union during their occupation. So, you know, we've got a significant proliferation of these weapons overseas now, and you just hope that they don't get turned around on us.
Hmm. All right, so as I was asking you, I want to give you a moment to kind of share your thoughts on Rand Paul and the 13 hours that he spent on the filibuster. What was it that inspired you about what he did?
Well, I mean, this preceded anything that Rand Paul did last week. Like I said, I filed this in December. But no, just the fact that you've got someone, you know, that takes a principled stand on something. I mean, we see these guys grandstand on issues all the time, like McCain did regarding Benghazi. But, you know, here's a legitimate, significantly legitimate civil liberties issue that this administration refused to answer when they sent John Brennan's name up to be CIA director. And it was outrageous, the letter that Holder sent down to the Senate. So Rand Paul demanded an answer. The administration ignored him. So it was a legitimate tactic to take to get his questions answered. And I think it showed people a lot about what this guy is about, and not maybe the way he is painted sometimes in the media. And you got to give Ron Wyden a lot of credit, Democrat who stood up with him on this issue. And it's something that should be a bipartisan issue, and it's something that more Democrats should have stood up for. And, by the way, a lot more Republicans should have stood up for. I have no problem, by the way, with the Republicans going to have dinner with President Obama. I think that's actually a good thing. I think there needs to be more dialogue across the partisan divide and across the aisle. But, you know, if Ron Johnson can have dinner with the president and then return back to the Senate chamber, I think that's great. But Kelly Ayotte, who's remained silent, and then from McCain, by the way, if I can just put this out as a Republican being critical of a Republican, if I may. From McCain and Lindsey Graham, who I've never been a fan of, to pass up the opportunity. If those guys had any issue with what Rand Paul had to say, they had 13 hours to go do what they're supposed to do, and that is take to the floor of the Senate and respond. Instead, they do a media drive-by on Rand Paul 2 days later. They take a cheap shot in the media 2 days later when they passed up the opportunity to respond to him in that 13-hour span.
Very good. Well, one last bit of information that I need from you. You know, we had quite the storm last Thursday and Friday, and a part of your district had quite the number of issues, especially when it came to flooding. That's the towns of Hull and Scituate. Have you had a chance to speak with any town official, either in Scituate and Hull, as to how those communities doing at this time?
Yes, and yeah, there's, you know, it's a mixed bag, and you got significant flooding issues, as you said. It's becoming a common occurrence. You know, fortunately, we didn't see the dramatic stuff that we saw with Plum Island in my colleague Bruce Tarr's district.
Right.
But we've got significant erosion problems, some of which we can address and restore, but I think there's some elements of that we're just not going to be able to fix. And I'll go beyond the two communities you listed. I mean, it goes beyond that. On Thursday, I'll be going down to Duxbury to see some of the damage that was wrought to Duxbury Beach, which we had a breach down there, as you know. So I'm going to get a first-hand look for the southern part of the district on Thursday.
Anything else that you want to talk about in regards to the your district? Whether it's
you guys want to close with, because I gave you a couple long-winded answers there. So,
well, we want to give you a chance to make sure we hit all. If there was anything else that was going on in the district, you had a chance to kind of talk about it.
I was going to mention the storm stuff in addition to the two topics we talked about. So I guess we covered it. But I appreciate what you do, Kevin, on the issue of transparency and your part you play in providing information not only to the show, but your work as a local reporter.
Well, you give me that opportunity to do so on a number of different platforms. So
I know it's getting beyond Rossi in his expertise with seawalls, but he must be excited that it looks as though we're going to have some dredging money coming the town of Marshfield's way.
Well, yes, and also some money being proposed at town meeting as well that I'm gearing up for, so I'm looking forward to it.
Very good. And I see that Rossi got some FaceTime on television holding a Mike Sullivan sign over the weekend, but he was looking a little run down.
Yeah, I was standing up there kind of in a daze. I think you probably noticed that.
You're in a daze. You just were swooning about Mike Sullivan's speech that day or something else?
I think it was the NyQuil that I was still on.
There you go.
Hey, Gavin. Sorry I missed your call the other day. I'm actually really sick. Just returning your call now. Give me a call and get a second.
Did you hear that, Senator?
Yeah, that was good.
That was I actually pulled a head. That was a Hedlund I pulled. I pulled a Hedlund.
Yes, you did.
Exactly what I did.
Yep.
Right off my cell phone, right onto the radio. Doesn't get any better than that. Well,
with no warning to me.
Can I please hear that one more time?
One more time before we go.
Hey, Gavin. Sorry I missed your call the other day. I'm actually really sick. I'm just returning your call now. Give me a call and get a second.
There it is. Well, Senator, we'll look forward to talking to you again next week, my friend.
It sounded like something out of like a Stoner movie or something.
Yeah, it was.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.